new movie. I hope you had fun and learned something. A little bit more about the movie. The movie was made 2 years ago, and the filmmaker David Franz interviewed 100 people for it and had access to 300 private archives of material, photographs, memories. The movie was shown in the US in 2012 on a maximum of 7 screens at the time and made $80,000 at the box office and got nominated for an Academy Award. And maybe Peter wants to talk about first how David Franz contacted him about the movie.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for turning out, and that very, very warm welcome means a lot to me. I'm here representing a movement, and what you see in this film is a beautiful moment in history where a community rose up and did something beautiful and remarkable. And I feel honored to have witnessed it and been a part of it. And I'm glad and kind of stunned that the US government is now showing this around and bringing me here. Because aren't they the target in the film? David Franz approached me about 2.5 years before the, about 2009, with this idea of doing a documentary about AIDS treatment activism, a very narrow focus on the Treatment and Data Committee of ACT UP New York and how it morphed into TAG with a 10-year story arc. From the beginning of ACT UP until the antiretroviral therapies came out in 96. And I knew he wasn't a filmmaker, he was a journalist. We didn't know each other. I knew his work. I had read some of his stuff, and when he wrote about AIDS, I was very moved by it. I knew he got it. He knew the period. And in fact, he had been there. He was in those rooms. He was reporting on ACT UP at the time. We never met, but he was in the back of the rooms taking it all in. And his lover died of AIDS, and he realized in 2009, like a lot of us were realizing, that this history was slipping away, that there were, that most young gay people that you would meet, if you mentioned ACT UP, they had no idea what you were talking about. And it was very sad that one of the great social movements, social activist movements in American history was slipping away from historical memory. So he was very determined to make this documentary, and he asked me if I had any videotapes. And I had about this many on a bookshelf, mostly recorded news broadcasts and the like. And he took everything. He cleared me out, and I said, "Be careful, Lisa." And he said, "I'll digitize them. You'll get them back." And then I didn't like hear from him for almost a year and a half while he collected everybody else's videotapes and scoured the country for them. And it's amazing what he found. He shot. As he said, he interviewed like 100 people contemporaneously and got 80 hours of contemporary interviews. But once he realized the trove of archive that he had, which was 800 hours of archival film, he realized he could tell the story pretty much all with the archival footage. And he used only about 5 minutes of the contemporary interviews. Much to that cinematographer's chagrin. he created something beautiful. He really did capture what we went through, and he captured that wild roller coaster of 10 years, the ups and downs, and the plowing through. And it brought it it brought it back to memory, and it's revived AIDS activism in the U.S. again. And we're now all working harder than ever trying to finish what we didn't finish in 96, which is preventing HIV infections and fighting for a vaccine and fighting for a cure. And that's what I'm doing these days. I'm an activist again, and this film kind of roped me back in. It's a very different time to be an activist, but I'm loving it. It's a period filled with some optimism. We have tools that can actually make a difference. So all you have to do is, as an activist, is figure out which political buttons to push to get those tools used, and then you start saving lives. So we didn't have that optimism back then. So there are some good things about today's activism that I'm really enjoying. But I'll let you guys talk or ask questions.
I have a few more for you before we start with Corinna and the audience. First of all, I would like to know if you have your own theories why it took more than a decade to get this film made. I mean, basically the events in the film end in 96. And he started making the movie in 2009. Mm-hmm. Why did it take 13 years for somebody to pick up on this and say, this would be great?
Well, I'll just repeat what David France says when he gets asked this question. His theory is that whenever there's a painful historical moment, and he looks back to the history just after the Holocaust and just after the Vietnam War, both of those circumstances, almost to a T, there was a gap of about 15 years before people started producing art and literature. It was just too painful immediately after to start reliving it. And sure enough, with the dark years of HIV in the States, we're now seeing documentaries, books, Larry Kramer's play has been revived and made into a movie on HBO, and we're seeing this kind of renaissance of looking back at this period 15 years after the fact. And I certainly remember 96, 97, 98, when me and the rest of the gay community, with the drugs coming out and the epidemic changing radically, how the community just ran away from the AIDS crisis. We had been through so much that we moved straight into gays in the military and
gay marriage
and we just found it too painful to look back, and we wanted to forget about it. And we never processed what we went through. We never memorialized it. And there was a lot of pent up harm and, you know, pain from those years. And now we're processing it. And I think it's a very healthy thing. And God knows this film helps you process it. So I think that's why it took so long.
Okay. In preparation for this talk, I saw an old talk show you were in with Phil Donahue from 1990, with almost everybody that was in the film, five people on the podium. And Anne mentioned, because she was being asked that over 70% of people afflicted with HIV and AIDS were people of color. Mm-hmm. And they still the largest group with new infections in the US today. In fact, the largest group is heterosexual women of color who get this. What do you think this population can take away from this? What can they learn from you with the struggles that they're in, that they're facing?
Well, first, some good news. By 1990, the disease had definitely diversified from just gay white men to a majority African American, both men and women. And that persisted through the 90s. But some good news is that in the last 10 years in the US, we've seen a nice reduction among HIV infections in heterosexuals, especially in African American women. What we have not seen is a reduction in gay and bisexual men. And in fact, we're seeing an increase in younger gay men, especially young gay men of color.
Why is that?
People no longer fear it, you know? People aren't, gay men aren't going to funerals every week. It's human nature, I think. I don't think any generation should be blamed. I'm pretty sure if I was a 20-year-old, I wouldn't, you know, HIV/AIDS wouldn't be really high on my agenda. I'd be trying to be optimistic about the world and thinking about gay victories and gay marriage, and it's just natural to say, well, HIV/AIDS, that was your generation's problem, so they're not focusing on it, and when you don't focus on HIV, it takes advantage of that. Time and time again, regardless of the community or the mode of transmission, if you take your eye off of HIV, it takes advantage of it. And it starts to spread. So we just have to keep at it, refocus it, use the new tools. In the US, we've got a drug now that people can take that prevents HIV infection. Yeah. We're all discussing that and having big debates about that. The good news is that it's highly effective. If people take it as prescribed, they really don't become infected, no matter what they do. We're working through all that. And I think we're going to begin to see dropping infection rates among gay men, first in San Francisco and then in New York City, where PrEP adoption is beginning to soar. So.
Thank you. Corinna, you're not going to go into PrEP. I know it's difficult for you. You said so. Are you envious of this film a bit? Because that's basically what you and Axel are working towards, for having this much access to private videotapes, private photographs, private letters, whatever you collected?
We already found a lot of stuff, a lot of materials, so in only 1 year time, so I'm very glad we had this project started and went along with it, and we are quite satisfied with what we could acquire in a short time. Do you think it should be a movie about the situation in Europe and Germany?
I think so. If it is as beautiful and effective as this, why not?
Okay, well, in ACT UP Amsterdam we had people making video stuff, so we documented our own activities. We worked together with filmmakers, photographers, artists, and so on. And this doesn't go for any part of the community in Europe or maybe in the US, and of course not from Germany. So we have to look for material, private material, and political material from political activism in private homes. And there weren't people making this kind of projects. There are some photographers we talked to. With a lot of photos and documents. But I wouldn't know a filmmaker who could maybe do that. We have that access, no? We have a lot of videotapes from private parties, from activities. So we have to digitalize this maybe. This is still a part, there's discussion about here in the Humboldt University. So we have some material on tapes, mm-hmm. could make a film. So,
maybe you will.
Filmmaker.
He wasn't a filmmaker before that, so I'm
no, he wasn't. He was a journalist. You can make it.
What we're collecting now is a lot of material, also visual stuff. You could make a movie with. So it's not only for researchers. It's also for maybe journalists, maybe artists who want to use the material. Yes. So there are some sources we could.
Is it already put to use in research? What you have collected?
We are just finishing to make long lists with all the material, and then contracts are made with the donators, and then it goes to the catalog of the university, which is quite some work too. I don't know, 7 months it will take, and then it's accessible.
Okay, and where will it be accessible here in this building?
No, it's at the Grimm Center, mm-hmm.
Close to here. Who of you will want to access the materials?
I can tell you, there are some people here who access. Two of the people are here who gave us very important material. And one of them gave us material, very personal material, from the perspective of someone who survived due to the medication, mm-hmm. and he was preparing his own death. It was artwork, he has artwork for his grave. He celebrated his birthday earlier, just to be sure to be able to enjoy people coming and so on. And then we have documents about his first pill-taking and what happened afterwards. And we have parts of his diary. Photographs, things like that, so we can tell the story from different perspectives, mm-hmm. which is very, very touching and important.
How can anyone in this room, me or anyone of them, or the public in general, help you doing your work?
At the moment, we have enough material, I can tell you. we have this website. The Deutsche AIDS-Hilfe supported us making this website, and us is the working group AIDS History into the Archives. And on this website, you find other archives where you can put your material, that you can give your material to. It can be a local archive because your self-serve group is part of the history of your local town. Can be Schulz Museum, can be Deutsches Hygienemuseum in Dresden. Find out what they collect and what they need. And of course, it's also about raising awareness. Don't throw away the stuff. If you don't want to give it away, at least keep it. There are so many things that already have been thrown away from projects, from people who have died, from people who don't want to live with the stuff any longer. And it's a partly most important of our work is to make people sensitive and aware about appreciation for their own history and the history of their projects, and not to let it just vanish away. So. Raise the awareness that everybody can do that.
So if anyone knows anyone, or is a survivor himself or herself, or wants to distribute materials to those guys, do so. They need it. is there anything like that in the U.S. to house the archival culture in New York, San Francisco, or the housing museums? Dealing with the stuff, because I suppose a lot of it is just unsorted in boxes.
There is. ACT UP gave its archives to the New York Public Library, and a lot of this video footage sits there and is accessible and cataloged. including a safe sex porn short that GMHC made that I co-starred in.
Good answer.
We have one too in our archive now.
You have that?
Yeah.
So there's one.
A German one.
I thought New York Library was the only surviving copy. It's not online, and I'm trying to keep it that way. But it is checked out quite often. So they have, and there are quite a few LGBT archives at various universities around the country now that are becoming quite competitive at trying to retrieve people's boxes and from those years. But I think NYU and the New York, you'll find a lot in New York City alone, at both NYU's library and New York, New York Public Library.
Guys, I'm going to go a little bit off top here. I mean, we just saw a movie where people, a lot of people did a lot of work, a lot of people died in the process, and you're talking about what you want to have in your archive, and saying that
I was coming to
you have enough. Let's talk about this, what you guys did in New York, how we got there, and what we need to do now to end it. I think that's the subject.
Okay. Nice like that moment there, thank you. Enough about the archives. I think preserving this history and knowing about the history is important because I think if you don't know what other people did, and I think before a lot of people see this movie, they don't know what those guys did. So that's part of the work.
How was it? I saw it.
So, Peter, what can we do to end AIDS? The New York governor just announced a plan to end AIDS in New York in 2020, if I'm right. So what did he say?
Yes, New York State became the first, has the first governor in the country to commit to a plan to quote-unquote end AIDS. By 2020, just 5 years away. And he put together a task force, which I got invited to join, to come up with a detailed plan of how we're going to accomplish this. There are a few places in the world now that are coming up with these plans, including Germany, which has a plan to end AIDS by 2020. In Germany, it is, I think, a good goal, and they're defining it very differently. That they are defining it as trying to keep people from progressing to AIDS, that nobody should get sick who's HIV positive. So they want to lower the number of people who are progressing to AIDS in Germany as close to zero as they can get. And that's a very important goal. In New York State, we're trying to dramatically lower the infection rate. We have about the same number as Germany does of infections every year in just our state, of a little over 3,000. And that's just unacceptable. And if we brought it down to below 750 a year, at that point, the total population of people with HIV in New York State would no longer be growing and would start to slowly decline. So they call that ending epidemic levels. We're not trying to get to zero, although we'd love to, but going from 3,000 to 750 in 5 years is a very heavy lift, but everybody is on the same page, the activists, the health departments, both the state and the city, and all the politicians. And this is a rare thing in AIDS, to have everybody working together. So San Francisco has a getting to zero plan. They only have 300 or 400 infections every year, and they want to get to zero by 2020. So there's kind of a healthy competition going on to try to really make a dent. What's sad is while we're seeing progress in blue areas of the US, where there's been already a 40% drop in infections in New York State in the last 10 years. There's been a 45% drop in infections in Washington, D.C., which is controlled by Democrats. There's been a large decrease among gay men in San Francisco in the last 5 to 7 years, which is democratically controlled. We're seeing decrease, and there's been a large decrease in the state of Massachusetts, which came out with Romney Care, a version of Obamacare, before any other state. And that dramatically started to lower HIV infections. So the blue states are seeing some great progress, but HIV is beginning to continue to increase in the American South, where Republicans control both legislatures and the governorship. They refuse to expand Medicaid, even though it's free to do so, under Obamacare, just to spite Obama. And this keeps thousands and tens of thousands of our poor from being able to have health care. And you can't fight an epidemic if you don't have health care. There's just no way. So we still have a lot of work to do in the country as a whole. But we think in New York State that if we show the rest of the country it can be done, that it would become politically harder for other states to just ignore it.
So what's the plan? What are you going to do?
It's complex.
We have time.
First, we're going to try to do a lot of what New York, what Germany already does quite well, which is get people who are HIV positive on treatment. In Germany, you have about 85% of people with HIV on effective antiretrovirals. That is one of the highest rates in the world. And your country should pat itself on the back for that.
Not enough.
Not enough, but it is one of the highest in the world. In the US, it is only 26-27% throughout the country, which is just horrible.
Did that increase in New
York? In New York State, it's about 40-45%. We're doing better than the rest of the country. Yes, now Obamacare, we should be able to keep moving that up. But it also means setting up programs that when somebody becomes HIV positive, there are programs that hold their hand all the way to getting set up with a doctor, getting to a clinic, getting them on treatment, that really helps them make that connection, to raise that care level far higher. You dramatically expand testing so that the 17% that don't know that they're positive find out. And then on the prevention front, you start aggressively offering PrEP. And this is obviously controversial, but we have a breakdown of the condom code in the US, and as do most populations of men who have sex with men throughout the world. There's far less condom use than there used to be when there was a high death rate. And we now have a drug that people can take just in case they are not wearing condoms 100% of the time. This drug will protect them. And we are finding ways to pay for that in New York so that everybody can afford it. And we're going to advertise it, and we're going to encourage it, and hopefully it gets it. For one thing's for sure, it is the first thing to come along in 20 years in the U.S. that has got gay men talking about HIV again, because they weren't talking about it at all 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It had just disappeared from our radar. And PrEP, the argument about PrEP, may end up saving more lives than the drug itself. Mm-hmm. Because it's got gay men arguing about how to protect themselves from HIV. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing. That conversation is what was so needed. And it finally broke the ice on that. And now there's debates everywhere on social media. And prep use is beginning to take off in San Francisco and in New York City. So we're going to see whether it makes a dent in the HIV infection rate.
Good. May I just add that not a short time ago, Great Britain and France allowed home testing sets, and they are much better than they have been ever before. So there's no reason not to allow them, in my opinion. That will raise the issue much more. It's already now in the German media, and should you be tested? Not on why and how come? Mm-hmm. So I think keeping the awareness raising it again. So I try to do this via history, and the appreciation of history, and talk about what happened and what could happen again here and what is happening at the moment. So keep the talk up. I do that as a journalist, and well, my contribution is talking about making people talk about the history.
I want to give that, I want to open it up, and whoever has questions. I was promised a second microphone. Can I have that now?
It's down.
So, we'll share.
Peter, I want to ask, does your current activism in any way go beyond the confines of the US or the West? What does current activism do about Africa?
Yeah. Can you guys all hear?
Yes, I mean, AIDS activism in the U.S. Finally stopped being myopic around the late 90s, and ACT UP was ACT UP Philadelphia, ACT UP New York, a group called Health Gap. They all started advocating for an international approach, that the U.S. should take a leadership role. They started forcing it into the presidential campaign of Bush v. Gore. And they forced Al Gore to endorse spending taxpayer dollars on bringing treatments to Africa. It wasn't until George Bush a few years later surprised everybody by also wanting to do that and announcing a program called PEPFAR that the U.S. really started making a dent on the international level, and has made a substantial dent, along with the international community. The slide up there of how many lives have been saved by antiretrovirals, it said 6 million. That was 2 years, two and a half years ago when he finished cutting the film. That number is how many people are on treatment, but that was 2.5 years ago. Now it's 15 million. So there are 15 million lives being saved by free antiretrovirals provided by the international community through PEPFAR, through the Global Fund, through these international programs. And that is still only about half of the total need. If we got everybody in the world on treatment, we would really end this epidemic. So there's work to be done on the international front. And the good news is there's a very vibrant international network of activists now. The internet has made a huge difference in that. We all know each other. There are AIDS activists in every country in the world. I've met some here. I'm going to enjoy myself in Amsterdam on the way home, but I'm going to meet the activists there, and we're everywhere. And you should check out some of the stories of AIDS activism in South Africa. They deserve a film like this. There is kind of a film that has a lot of the South African activism in it, but they really need to be focused on. They're called the Treatment Action Campaign, TAC, and they did some just beautiful work. So.
Okay, fun fact, there's a South African sesame person that is HIV positive, a little girl called Tammy. So even the 3-year-olds in South Africa are getting educated while watching TV.
First of all, Peter, you are a hero. Good
enough.
And the question, my observation is the documentary ends in 1996, like most of the films, of the books, of the plays about the AIDS epidemic, which hasn't ended yet. Okay, that was the drama period. The real drama is that we have a huge gap, 20 years without narration. That community has disbanded. There are no energies in this Baha'i, in this area anymore. And that's a real problem, I think, that we have to, it's been re-archived, which is good for the past, but really, really bad for the present, because there's still infections going on. And my question is about PrEP, which is at the moment, though controversial, the only possible way to organism to slowly stop it. Since it's only legal in the United States, and in Europe there's a big discussion in Germany, which may lead to nothing because it's only chit-chat, even though in the big international conferences we are only talking about PrEP and hepatitis C. In your opinion, what can we, as we are a group of activists, what can we do in Europe, in Germany, to push and accelerate the introduction of PrEP?
Well, I think Britain might be the second country, and Australia might be the third, or one of those two might beat the other. But the EU needs to approve this, and by the way, I love your t-shirt. ETAC, the European Treatment Activists Coalition, they are pushing for this, for European approval, and I'm optimistic that it's going to come. I don't think they're going to pass this by, you need to start acting up about it. I was a little deflated when I heard that Germany's plan to end AIDS was only a healthcare plan and not a prevention plan. I do realize that on a population level, you have one of the lowest infection rates in Europe. But that should be viewed as an opportunity, not as an endpoint. The 3,000 infections you have every year, you can lower those. And the more you lower those, the easier it gets to lower. So I would hope that would be added to the agenda of activists in this country. I realize we don't have the energy that we had in the glory years, the dramatic years. Personally, I don't think you can recreate that energy in the absence of what we were going through back then, with the constant death and dying, and the other side of that, some real hatred and resistance from anybody that could help us. Without that dynamic, I don't think you're going to see the gay community rise up again en masse to fight HIV. But the good news is that there are dedicated activists. We are all connected now. And we do have tools that we can use to make a difference both on the healthcare front and on the prevention front. And as a smaller, smarter, meaner, tighter community of activists, internationally connected, I think we have it in our power collectively to make a difference still. And I know we're doing it in the US, and I think you can do it here too. You don't need a huge community behind you. It only took seven of us to put that condom on Jesse Helms' house.
More questions? As a film journalist, I would like to add, for the last 20 years, the discussion has not has been silenced concerning this period of time. But in American television, there have been amazing developments. We had HIV-positive main characters in television shows for years, not only in Queer as Folk, but in stuff that Sally Field was the mother in. So maybe it took 20 years to get the main public to a certain level of information that you can now work with and participate from. Do you agree?
Yes.
More questions?
We wore them out.
There's no, we didn't.
There's one.
Yes.
I have to listen. Thank you for the activism. My first question is about the situation of AIDS research at the moment. How do you see that? How do you see that challenges for this funding and money going to the research? What are the priorities for the research? That's the first question. Second question is related to the discussion about the people of color and race within and how HIV affects people differently in race. And there have been some, since migration now is a huge thing in Europe and some right wing politicians, for example, in Britain, talking about HIV, migrants,
right.
Are they using the resources of the health system?
UKIP.
How do you see, how the HIV community addresses issues of race and migration and how those intersectionalities, are they being addressed now, or how do you see that?
It's a big issue in the States as well, and again, we're, like you are, we're seeing kind of a blue-red divide, where the states like California and New York that basically try to offer as many services as possible to its undocumented community helps alleviate a risk of HIV taking off in those communities. But if an immigrant community is targeted by politicians and services are withdrawn, and they are made out to be scapegoats, HIV will take advantage of that. It's plain and simple. And so we know those politicians are idiots and should be fought. And that is one way to take care of HIV. So, and your first question was on research. The good news is that after ACT UP, when we went from virtually no money spending on research in the US, within 3 years of ACT UP's birth, we were over $1 billion a year at the NIH. And an amazing bipartisan consensus happened that we needed to do, the Republicans were scared of us from then on out. And they said, yes, we need to do AIDS research, and it started to pay off. So now we're at $3 billion every year at the NIH for AIDS research. It's remained about 10% of the total NIH budget. It gets divided between cure research, vaccine research, prevention research, research called comorbidities for people my age that are dealing with all sorts of issues. There are some Republicans that are still trying to attack that research and say, why aren't we spending more on Alzheimer's, or they're trying to pit diseases against each other. But so far, they are not, they have not coalesced into any serious threat to that AIDS funding. And after the Berlin patient, the first person cured of AIDS, the focus on cure research kind of took off internationally. And it's a very exciting area now. And I know you all saw me in this film say two or three or four times, I didn't think I was going to live to see a cure. Now I think I'm going to live to see a cure. Because I see what's going on. And it might not be what some of you consider a full cure, where the virus is removed from the body entirely, but it will be a practical cure, where like a therapeutic vaccine, if they come up with a really good vaccine that they can use to prevent HIV, that vaccine will probably also be used in people with HIV. We'll take it, and our own immune systems will control the virus in our bodies and keep it low, so that we don't have to take the meds every day. And that's good enough. It's amazing. It's not around the corner, but 5 to 15 years in that range is very doable. And I plan on living beyond 15 years. I'm going to get old. I'm already old. Okay. Yeah.
Nice to hear that you're still alive and keep alive for a couple of years. My question is the following. Archiving the materials is a good thing, and I think I know from Axel and Corinne, the project they're doing now is the JCF and the Humboldt University is an extra thing of money. So it has to be structured, because you cannot do it in a couple of months. Do you think archiving is a part of the agenda of prevention? What's your opinion about that? You can have access to the history. Is that a part of prevention for the future?
Well, I'll put it this way, in this debate about whether archiving is important or not. You wouldn't have seen this film if it weren't for archives. After David France came to me and looked at my personal archives of videotapes, his next step was the New York Public Library, which had a huge archive of active videos. And he then constructed this film, which reinvigorated this film and United in Anger and all the and now the Dallas Buyers Club and the Normal Heart. This has all reinvigorated AIDS activism in the US, and it's got everybody working on prevention activism now. So in a sense, this history, which basically says we are powerful, we changed the world once, is saying you can do it again. You can make a difference.
So what I hear from your opinion is that in the prevention money that is available, a part can be used for archiving because there's a good instrument for prevention.
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
I think there's enough ears that hear
your opinion. Yeah.
First, thank you. And I have two questions. The first is, how did ACT UP continue to fund themselves in the 10 years, 15 years, when there was limited funding already? And my second question is, how do we continue to drive the discussion of the importance of HIV prevention and treatment in not just wealthy countries, but around the globe, and especially the structural drivers of the epidemic?
Well, ACT UP during its heyday raised money all sorts of ways, and at our peak in 89, we went from just a few thousand dollars in 87 to having a budget that reached over $1 million in 1990 for that 1 year. And that's after we started doing, we did a big art auction, and every famous artist in the country donated something. Keith Haring and Gober, and so that one night we raised a shitload of money. It was very exciting. But we sold, and Keith Haring donated some artwork to us. The Silent Sequel's Death with the three figures, hear no evil, see no evil, and it says ignorance equals fear. That work, he gave that death. And the organization continued to make t-shirts and posters, and that carried them well past 96. plus the organization shrunk to such a small size it didn't need a lot of money after 96. But now it's growing again, which is great to see. As far as prevention internationally, it's all about targeting. That's what's in vogue among the activists and the public health officials, is HIV seems to really spread in specific communities and in specific areas. And if you focus your efforts there with our current tools, and if the very traditional tool of testing is still better than any of the other tools, and then getting people on treatment, that can dramatically turn the curve. We're having a harder time with condoms, keeping populations engaged with using condoms. We are having quite a bit of success in Africa with circumcision campaigns, voluntary circumcision. We're not going out and forcing that on anybody. But that dramatically lowers the risk of acquiring HIV. We should begin to see real strong international pushes, including here in Europe first, but then everywhere, for Truvada, generic Truvada. It's out there already. India makes it. And there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be offering that to high-risk communities around the world.
There was a question in the middle there, right?
Hi. It's been 30 years that we've been dealing with this. Let's say New York City, when is there going to be an educational format, a program implemented in schools? Not to gay men who are having sex, because then it's too late. But if we take HIV, like we do teen pregnancy, and you're going to answer, and we look at their program, if you start at grade 1, 5 years, and educate them about sex and HIV, then I think we'll have lower numbers because people are just aware. My experience in the epidemic, all the friends I've seen die, it's always been a lack of education. Yep. People are afraid to get tested because there are all these rumors. And we have this big epidemic in Indiana because people are not educated. And what part of this prevention plan, we're going to get the numbers to this number, where is education?
It's in there. In New York, there's actually a bill before the House and Senate, the State House and the Senate, called the Safe Kids Act or something like that, and it's mandating sex education throughout New York State. The problem in the states is that education is handled locally, and very few states or higher levels of government enforce a mandate to do sex education in the schools. It's left up to each local school district. And what that's left us with is, with American prudishness around sex, is that most of our school systems don't teach decent sex education. They certainly don't teach about what gay men need to know. And that's one of the things we see in Europe, and definitely in Germany, where it's probably one of the reasons you have a much lower infection rate. Because at least you've got that kind of across-the-board educational program in the school systems that teaches this stuff. It's absolutely crazy that we don't teach this in the U.S. We see these 19-year-old, 20-year-old gay adults who are really clueless about HIV. And it's just criminal. And it's because they're not taught anything in school. So in New York, we're going to try to fix that with this new legislation, which has the governor's backing. We have a heavy lift getting that through our Republican-controlled Senate. But if we can get it passed anywhere, it's through New York's government-controlled Republican-controlled Senate. So We're working on that.
Quick sidebar, the most successful teenage prevention for pregnancies in Mississippi, which lowered the rates for teen pregnancies in that state by 40%, has just been cut by the Republican Senate. So just because something works is not... Talk to the Republicans and to the religious right. Yes.
I have a question. I think that AIDS is not starting in 1981.
Right.
It is
right.
Much older, and I think there are thousands of people died from AIDS already before the first people died in Los Angeles and it came up as a kind of disease. Do you know if there is this research on this?
Yes.
And how do you have access to it?
It's actually studies on this. They have the, well, they know the root of HIV starting in the very early 1900s when it leaped from monkey to man in central southern Africa. They don't know exactly how that happened. It could have been, you know, bushmeat processing or what have you. And it slowly percolated in that continent through that whole century, but without large amounts of truck travel, it didn't explode. It eventually leaped to Haiti in around 1960 to 1961 through tourism, and there was definitely a gay tourist scene for Americans in Haiti in the 60s. And around 1969, it leaped to the US. They weren't storing lots of gay blood from gay men in the 70s, but they did start a study, a major study of hepatitis B vaccine. In 1977, and the CDC had all the stored blood samples from 1977 on of over 1,000 gay men in New York and San Francisco. And as soon as they isolated the HIV virus in 83-84, they looked back at 1977. And what they found was that in 1977, 5% of gay men in New York and San Francisco were HIV positive. By 1983, it was 60% in both cities. So it had been, and you know, it only, everybody thinks it started in 81. It was spreading through the 70s in the US. And there were people dying, and they didn't know what they were dying.
No, they
right.
died.
Right.
Illnesses.
Right. There were people who died of AIDS in the 70s in the U.S.
Yeah, I keep asking myself if we just focus on HIV again, if we might have a chance to also develop strategies against new diseases arising. Hepatitis C is one example, but also which keeps me more alert is the rising of multi-resistance in the ordinary sexually transmitted diseases. So what do you think about that?
Yes, I mean, this is what public health officials do, right? When you have a killer disease that's infectious, and you begin to have tools to prevent those infections or dramatically slow an epidemic, what public health officials throughout history have done is they've set goals to try to eliminate it from the face of the earth. And they've done this with nearly with polio, and they've done it with other diseases, and we should be continuing to focus on HIV until it's gone. It'll probably take a vaccine to actually do it, just like it did with polio. But we're getting close to that date. And until then, we have tools that can bend the curve. We've already seen a 30% reduction worldwide in infections and deaths. So we're now on a progress curve. But we're still, you know, it's still 2 million deaths a year. It's a major killer. But we know it, we're on a downward slope. We know how to keep it going down. It's just money, leadership, activism, and we can do it.
One of the demands then, those times, the title of the movie, was more basic science. Basic science into how does the human system work, and I still think there are huge gaps, and of course there have been some very hot research, a lot of research on medication, but not on basic science enough, not yet. And what we now see is that concerning cancer, we get the same problem with how does antibodies work maybe against cancer, and we don't know enough. So I think much more patient groups, activism from other diseases should work together on how do we get much better basic research.
We're seeing really exciting stuff on the cancer front these days, and it's all immune-based. And that body of knowledge on the immune system was all because of AIDS research. Because they plowed tons, because they knew very little. Immunology was pretty damn basic in 81 and 82 and 83, the science. And it's become a lot more robust and knowledgeable because of the study of HIV. So it's all one part of the whole. Never pit one disease against another.
Okay, any more questions?
Leti?
All right, then I can eat. Let's finish this. Thank you all very much for coming. I have not a question, but a wish. This movie has not been seen broadly enough in Germany because it doesn't have a distributor. So if you know anyone who has any kind of power with any kind of film distribution, talk to them about this film, make them aware that it is important, make them aware that it should be in movie theaters, that it should be in schools, that it should be available online and on DVD. Thank you. Thank you all for coming.